What's up, everybody? Armand here, back with another episode. Today's guest, we have Noah Scott. Noah's started many companies, some successful, some not. He's been a soap maker, a painter. He opened a really great film studio back in the day, and now he's starting The Big Possible, which is epic retreats for entrepreneurs. At these retreats, he's changing people's lives with formulas for creative breakthrough. And something really cool about Noah is he's been doing this thing where he's a digital nomad, and every month he's lived in a different country. So he talks a lot about how you establish habits throughout those months and how you can be successful while also moving around all the time and living in different places. I had a lot of fun talking to Noah. He's a great guest, and I hope you enjoy this episode of the Play Hard Podcast.
Work hard, play hard, work hard, play hard, work hard.
How are you doing? You've been traveling Eastern Europe. How's that going?
Dude, it's amazing. I don't want to leave Europe, but the time zone is killing me. So yeah. I got to get back to the Western Hemisphere sometime soon so I can get back on the right time zone.
Yeah. I can imagine like keeping up with work there has been a bit of a challenge, but hey, at the same time, that's the life of a digital nomad, I guess.
That's right.
So you're the founder and CEO of Big Possible, which you guys do epic retreats around the world for entrepreneurs. You want to touch a little bit about what that company does?
Yeah. So this started really as a way for me to tap into the idea of being really lonely as an entrepreneur and not having the ability to voice some ideas on with other people. And so I wanted to create something that would allow new entrepreneurs, successful entrepreneurs, an ability to build deep connections outside of the office and to do it in a place where they could really have that peace of mind of knowing that, you know, they're here, they're not online, they're away from Slack, they're away from Zoom, and they're pampered in this luxury environment where everyone is thinking big, you know, thinking outside of the comfort zone and what's possible. And, you know, so that was like the main intention. Years ago, I had this vision of one day owning a chain of boutique hotels. And I've always put that off as this pipe dream. It was too big. I need a bunch of money to make that happen. Yeah. And one day I was just sitting here talking to my coach. And we realized like, you know what, you can do this right now. Just rent a villa, invite all the cool people that you want to show up. And what I love more than anything is talking business ideas, collaborating with other people. And that group energy is really what the idea was built on. So flash forward after that call with my coach, I booked my first villa. I sent out 10 text messages to a few of my buddies. And I say, hey, I'm going to do this retreat. It's going to be kind of like this creative entrepreneur business retreat. We're going to have speakers. We're going to go on adventures. And 9 of them ignored me. But one of them said, oh my God, I've been craving something like this. Yeah. And that was the signal that I was like, okay, I'm onto something. This is cool. I'm not the only crazy person out there that wants to connect in person, have a great adventure and talk business.
That's so awesome. That's rings true to something I remember learning in school was the first leader is usually very crazy. But the first follower is just as much of a leader and just as crazy as that leader because you need that first follower to kind of get the other people to join in. And one thing I like that you said, and it was something else I learned in school, was that your eureka moments and like the big blasts of creativity don't happen when you're on your own or alone. They generally happen around the water cooler when you're talking to other people or when you're sharing ideas. Which I thought was like really insightful at the time because I was like, I always thought creativity just happened in your room when you're like thinking deeply. I don't know. I was 18. So what are some of the things you do in these retreats to kind of like make these moments happen, to keep the creativity flowing?
Wow. Yeah. I'm glad you asked that. There really is a recipe for breakthrough. And the first step is getting out of the routine. So away from the things that... you're preconditioned to think a certain way when you see the same surroundings, when you see the same emails coming through, when you're talking to the same people, ideas sort of, you don't feel the inspiration as deeply, as vividly. So by removing yourself from the comfort zone and putting yourself in an exotic destination, somewhere new and exciting, that opens up the door to have breakthroughs, have new, fresh ideas. I think the other component of this really is in being free of the day-to-day logistics. So when you surround yourself in a position where you don't have to worry about ironing or cooking or planning the logistics, so there's no stress, you're now relieved of this grind, then you're able to slow down and actually think expansively. And that's, I think, one of the things that we don't give ourselves enough time to actually think. And so the retreat sort of forces you to. It's like you're out of the day-to-day, you're in somewhere exotic and new, but you're also in an environment that's taken care of. You're pampered. You've got your transportation taken care of, your itineraries planned. You've got all the food taken care of. And then when you mix that together with this hive mentality of brilliant minds, that's really where the magic kicks in. So the deep connection, the conversations that you're having, like you were talking about being at the water cooler. So somebody could say something and they've been through an experience that's been similar to you, and they might create this spark that maybe through their experience, they're able to share some light and say, you know what, I really like this idea. What if you did it this way? And that could create a little bit of a eureka moment, an aha moment. So I think those are just a few of the components. And then when you mix it in with things like adventure, things like cultural immersion, and also just like taking care of your wellness. So there's like a little bit of exercise, a little bit of movement, all of those combined create that perfect little recipe to just ignite creative, expansive thinking.
What are some of the moments you've noticed on these entrepreneurs that are working with you? Have you ever seen like that light go off in their eyes?
I mean, it's like 4 days of lights going off. That's the crazy part. So
it's like fireworks.
It's wild. So I just remember, being at dinner in Puerto Vallarta, and one of the guests, Andrew, comes up to me and he's got tears in his eyes. And he just says, thank you so much, brother. You just changed my life more than you can even know. Just the conversations that I've had with, with this guest and this guest, I'm going home with like 3 new business ideas. Wow. I'm starting a partnership with this guest. And actually these guys are still talking to me, now they've started a business together. They're doing some cool things. One of the other guys is going to be coming to our next retreat because he just made so many great connections. Then there's even just the soulful stuff. So I had one person who was dealing with grief. He had a loss in the family, and being able to chat with somebody else who shared a very similar experience, he was able to come to terms with this in a way that it was unexpected. And so he's leaving with this weight of that grief has been lifted, and because of just sharing that experience with someone else that was attending and seeing how they've both overcame similar challenges, and just the soul connection alone, I think that was another thing. So it's not just like I've got this business breakthrough, but there's also the humanity aspect of learning from somebody else that's going through something similar and realizing that you're not alone.
Yeah. And that ties on along to your loneliness thing, like how you're bringing these people together. And it sounds like you've managed to put together something that's very fulfilling. Like it's not just fitting a business need, but like our human need for connection and the soulfulness part of it. Is that safe to say this is a very fulfilling thing for you?
Yeah, it's taken a long time. So this is probably a good decade of me experimenting with a bunch of different businesses.
Yeah.
So
I was going to transition into that. So what were the failures?
Yeah. So, okay. Well, in my 20s, I was a total delinquent, but yeah, I did dabble
as we
in
normally
business.
Are.
Yeah. So, I did dabble in a few businesses. I started a soap company with my dad. I just remember my dad was, he had a ranch out in the middle of Nevada, in the middle of nowhere. And he was making this biodiesel fuel for one of the tractors. And one of the byproducts from that is this very crude glycerol, which is basically soap. And it's this like black gooky stuff. So he shows my mom and he says, look, honey, I made soap. And she's like, ew, I'm not going to use that. Come back to me when you have something pretty. And so he pulls out this craft book. My mom loves craft books. And he's like, hey, Noah, do you want to make soap with me? Look at these, look at this book. So we're looking at the book. And so we had this whole on Tyler Durbin moment where we're like, let's do it. We converted one of the barns into a soap workshop. And I would drive out from LA, drive out to Nevada. We'd make a few batches of soap and I'd bring it back to LA and I'd sell it at farmers markets. So,
wow.
That was my first kind of entrepreneurial venture. I had a fashion line before that. That was a complete bust. I made a whole bunch of like t-shirts and stuff and I sold through everything, but I didn't know anything about business. And so I was selling under my profit and it was just like throwing my money away.
Yeah.
But it was cool and I had a fashion show. So, you know, I got some dates out of it.
And you learned a lot at the same time. You learned to check your margins.
Yeah, totally. Totally. So those were my early ventures. And I didn't really find it until I was 30 and I started a production company. I got this idea when I was walking across Japan and I was filming a documentary. It was like this Eat, Pray, Love sort of trip. So travel's always been a big thing for me. And I think at the end of my 20s, I was waking up and I realized like, this sucks. Like my life is not going anywhere. I was bartending and I just was always just spending my money on drinks at the end of the week. And I'm like, where am I going with my life? This just isn't fulfilling. I need to do something differently. But I didn't know what that was going to be. And so me being the crazy, just like impulsive dude I've always been, I'm just like, I booked a ticket to Japan. I had a backpack. I got rid of everything. And I walked across the country filming a little documentary with my iPhone. Along the way, I almost gave up many times. I ran out of money, had to work in a sake factory. And I was working on a farm.
That's sick.
But I had this idea. I was having so much fun filming the journey that I wanted to create a production company. I was like, this is great. I want to help other people tell their stories. Came back to LA. I got an internship with a film director. And I started this company making short films for actors. By the first few years, the first few months, we quickly became LA's number one house to go film short films as an actor. And, you know, we built a team together. We were kind of like a little rock star team.
Short films as an actor, like for actors or like mini documentaries on these actors?
So they're called a demo reel. And this is basically back in the day. As an actor, it would be really hard for you to go get a job as an actor unless you have proof that you can do the job. And so to shortcut that, actors would come and book us to pretend to a certain degree that they were in a movie. And so we'd film it. It'd look really cinematic, but we'd have this scene that would feature them. And nobody was really doing this back when we were doing it.
It's like demos in music. It's very very similar. It's like not a complete song, but it's enough for you to get the feel and like the snippet of what it would sound like if it were complete. That kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And we've had people use the footage to go off and book jobs with Disney. They've booked jobs with Marvel and, you know, having our TV shows. And so little by little, the word would start to spread. People would realize they'd need it. And then we had such a big portfolio by just being consistent with it that it was, you know, before we knew it, we just had people knocking on the door all day long. Now there's 100 other companies that are doing that. And
time did you do this?
This was 2013, I think. Yeah, around there. So that was quite the adventure. We ended up making a bunch of bad business decisions, like getting into VR was one of them. I was like, oh yeah, this is it. So we got into VR. I blew like 30 grand on VR cameras. We made a feature film with our own money. That was, you know, a big distraction from the core business. But you know, and after all that, it was good because I realized that this isn't where I want to go with the future. I ended up, you know, walking away from that business, just handed it to the other partners. And I started working at a marketing agency for a while. And this is, I think, 4 years being at a cool agency. But during that time, you know, I learned and I was, you know, developing how to learning how to button up as a business owner, because all this time I've been figuring things out on my own, and I didn't really know like how a full-fledged operation would work. But yeah, that's been kind of the story. And then all of that kind of culminated during my time as an employee. I kept searching for what is it that I want to do? And I tried all kinds of things, wrote and published a book. I started a career as an artist. I painted and I held an exhibit, started a coaching business. And, you know, here I am like, okay, I've been around the block. I know a thing or two about that. And I signed on my first clients and I realized like, man, I hate this. This is not what I want to do. And, you know, during this point in time, I'm like, I know I want to start my next business. I'm ready. I want to do it. I just didn't know what it was. And that's when, talking with my coach, we finally just hit on this idea for doing retreats, and quit the job. Been all in on this for the last, now it's been 8 months or so, and just loving every moment of it.
Man, it sounds like you've had such a wild journey. You've done so many cool things. There is one question that comes to mind. It's something that I've similarly faced, and I'm like really curious to hear what you'd have to say. Is I've been told, just because I've moved around from roles here and there, that it would be better if I just stuck to something and got really good at it and stayed with it. But my thing has always been, what if I find out after like a couple months or a year, I don't like it? I want to be able to try as many different things and see what sticks. What's your take on that? Because it feels like you've put on many different hats. And now you found something that stuck, but at the same time, it was the thing that you wanted to do when you started this whole journey in the first place. So what would you have to say to someone who keeps trying different roles?
Yeah, there's two things. So the first, read the book Range by David Epstein. It really talks into this. He goes into like this idea of how there are two types of people in the world. The specialists who know what they're going to do. They get out of the gate and they go, I've got a friend who's an acupuncturist. She's been doing this for 20 years and she is like the best in the world and she's incredible. And, you know, because she's been consistent, she never has to worry about finding work. She can charge a premium price and she's set and she loves it. That's great. I have a friend who's a shoe designer. Same thing. She got into shoes early and she's been, you know, now she's like one of the top shoe designers in the world. And this is all because, you know, they found it, they figured it out and they stuck with it. But then there's people like Roger Federer. He's a tennis player. He was dabbling in so many different things, you know, from skiing to, I forget the other sports that he played, but he was a late bloomer because he was experimenting. But what happened when he started playing tennis, when he found it, he had all these other skill sets that he could apply and bring into this. So that would be one. Is like there, you don't have to necessarily know what you want to do, but if you're actively learning and you're actively growing with the idea that, okay, I might find it. And when I do, I'll have all of this experience that I can bring in and tie together. That's okay. That's good. The other is really about the why you're experimenting and the mindset behind it. Because if you are okay with being uncertain and knowing that you're in this experimentation phase and not susceptible to the worry that kicks in and the self-doubt and the self-criticism, continue experimenting until you find the thing that you're really good at and you really love. Because it's much more practical to find something you love and then hone your skills to be really good where you can become world-class at that, than it is to try to force yourself to love something that you might happen to be proficient at and then go on and dread it later. Right. Yeah. So that's really the challenge. If you can resign yourself mentally to be prepared for that challenge of knowing that, okay, there's other people that are getting success faster than you because they're specializing, but it's okay to wait because you're experimenting. It's okay to trust that you're going to figure it out eventually. And that's all. Then go for it. If you're not mentally strong enough to sort of wait that out and follow the passion and know that it's going to be hard and it's going to be brutal and there's going to be years before you finally like figure out how to make money with your passion, then take the safe route. Find something that you can specialize in, get really good, even if you don't love it. But that's kind of the two schools of thought I would have for that.
Yeah, I totally agree, especially with the it's gonna be hard thing. Like, I wonder how many people, like whether you like it or not, have have done something that they only kind of liked, but it was really hard to actually get comfortable in it. Cause starting something new, this is what I meant by whether you like it or not, it's going to suck. Like, you're going to be bad at it. That's just how being new at something is. You're going to face with struggles in confidence and struggles in like, am I good enough at this, until you get enough repetitions and finally get comfortable and learn like the tricks of the trade, I guess. But I wonder how many people just stuck with it because they didn't want to start over.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that, like, you, if you want to take that route, you have to be really comfortable starting from scratch over and over and over again, which is not an easy task. But when you do find that one thing that clicks, you have all this myriad of other skills that you can put into it and get a different perspective.
And it also, there's another thing too, because in hindsight, I'm able to look back at a lot of the things that I started and stopped. And so now I'm able to say that some of the things that I did, I gave up because it was hard. I was really good at just stopping and starting something new. And that was, in essence, it was me avoiding the hard work. And so had I stuck with any of these ideas, like for example, the soap company, I love it. And one day I would want to do a soap company again. But once it became too complex, I found it easier to just give up and start something new than it was to continue. Same thing with art. Like the art, like had I just stuck with art, eventually I would have broke through. But I found it easier to just get to the point where I had one exhibit and be like, cool, that was great. Now let me start something new. And all of this was really avoiding the grit that I would have to take to see something all the way through to the end. And the humility now that I'm literally at the point, okay, I've done my first two retreats. They were fantastic. I got a lot of great reviews. Now I'm smack in the middle of the hardest moment of my life, which is scaling this, which is getting to the point where we have predictable lead flow, where we have where we can not just get lucky and have, you know, two events that were off the hook, incredible, soulful, inspiring, and powerful, but now continue to elevate that. There's a whole new skill set that I'm tapping into. And because of the past experiences and because of being able to recognize that, wow, I don't want to walk away from this. It's too close to home. It's too important of a mission. It's not just me that I'm helping, it's other people, that I can't give up. I can't just throw in the cards because it's hard. That there's more to it than my feelings.
It's, and
that,
like, that's a greater really than you thing.
Yes. Yes. And that gives you the fuel to keep going no matter how hard it gets. Once you find that point and realize, like, wait, I can push myself a little harder. I can go a little deeper in this. That's when you know that you're on something big.
Do you feel like if you were to stop, there's a whole bunch of people that you could have helped that aren't going to get that help? And does that at all like impact your decision?
Yeah, to a certain degree. I know there's other people out there. Like, I'm not the only one doing retreats. I'm not the only solution out there. But am I the only one right now that has the unique vision and has the unique approach with focusing on entrepreneurs, focusing on the connection that happens between entrepreneurs, not just about making money, not just about making numbers, but about creating this holistic sort of a container for entrepreneurs to grow together, and then have the leverage to go out and do bigger things in life.
Yeah.
That's something that's pretty unique. And I know, like, being able to tap into an entrepreneur who's going through something and just needs that support group, or even just needs a reset, and being able to give that to them, I know that's priceless. And so, yeah, there's a ton of people that I'm looking at in the future, this being able to impact a lot of lives, not just directly, because I'm only impacting 20 people at a time at these retreats, but when they go back to their companies, you know, and I had a founder, a co-founder, one of his founder went to the retreat in Morocco. And so this co-founder sends me a message and he says, I don't know what you did to this guy at the retreat, but he's a changed man. Thank you so much. You know, and those little things are like the things that are just, okay, this is a signal that it's waterfalling off. when a founder comes into the experience and they're tapping into this peace of mind, this clarity, this renewed vigor for life, and they go back to the office, how many other lives is that impacting? Or maybe somebody that shows up has had this idea brewing in the back of their mind for the longest time, and they've been afraid to take that risk, or they haven't been able to connect the dots in how to actually bring it to life. And then at the retreat, they might meet somebody who can shortcut their figuring things out stage and help them get this project off the ground. Now, how many lives are we impacting?
So yeah, it's not just that one person. Effect.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And one thing that came to mind also when we were talking about the stopping things and starting new things, I think it's important to ask yourself, am I stopping or quitting or starting something new? Am I doing it because this thing is hard, or am I doing it because this thing no longer serves me? And that's a really tough question to ask yourself, because sometimes I've personally noticed the answer was both. And yeah. I was like, yes, is this not serving me because it's hard? Or is it because I truly want to do something else? So there's a whole list of different things that could go along there. But one thing I did notice in your profile that you really like talking about is some of the risks you've taken. So what are some of the bigger risks you've taken along your journey?
I would say that's, you know, probably one of the most fun things I do in life is I try to always set a life-changing goal each year. So the way that works is I'll say at New Year's or my birthday, whatever, I'm hitting 40 this year. So I'm going to set some
epic
challenges for myself. And every year I look at that list and I say, okay, I'm going to do one thing that I would consider life-changing. Meaning if I do it this year, it would impact the rest of my life. I can put that off and I can say, okay, this is something that was, if I didn't do this, life would stay the same. But because I've done this, it's completely different. So let's take my current lifestyle right now. So I'm full-time nomad. I'm living, I got rid of my apartment in LA and I've been on the road basically living in a different country every month. That was something I set for this year, as well as doing the retreats. So gambling with this uncertainty of, okay, I have no idea if this is going to pay off, but dropping $30,000 to host a retreat without even having a full guest list yet.
Yeah.
Those are big risks.
Yeah.
And you have to resign yourself with this idea of, okay, what's the worst that can happen? You set yourself up. Worst that can happen is, okay, nobody shows up to the retreat. I lose a bunch of money. No problem. I can work with that. I can always go get a job. And once you accept that you can live through the worst case scenario, it becomes a lot easier to take the risk. So yeah, starting the retreat business, that was probably one of the biggest risks I've taken. Learning how to paint was a big one, right? Never knew how to paint. I just told myself, okay, I'm gonna learn how to paint and hold an exhibit this year. Did it. And because of that, like so many other things happened. Like I found new confidence for my creativity. I tapped into like a whole network of artists that I would have never actually hung out with. Those are some of the big risks. I guess making a feature film was a big one, but current lifestyle feels like it's a risk every single day, because I'm literally gambling with, I'll make money and I'll put it right back into the retreat.
Yeah.
I still have no idea if everyone's going to show up or not, but that's part of the fun. Yeah, and every time it works out, every time I get through it, I realize that I'm fine. And all the fear that I had leading up to that, I realized that, sure, there's a part of me that wants to play it safe, that wants to go back and get another job and just not have to worry about taking these risks. But every time I take a risk, the magic that happens because of that and the skills that I grow out of that enable me to then feel more confident to take bigger risks down the road.
One life-changing goal a year. That is so cool. And I really like how you made it. Like, this year's goal isn't something that you do it once and check it off. No, it's every month you're going to live somewhere else. And yeah, that's awesome. How's that experience been so far? We're in the beginning of August. So you've been bopping around for like 7-8 different countries or so.
Yeah, I think it's actually been like 12 this year. It's interesting because you're not quite a tourist when you do something for a month. Yeah. You're sort of this hybrid between a local and a tourist at the same time. So you show up in a new city, you have no friends, and maybe I'll join like a digital nomad group or something so I can find some events that are happening. But what's fascinating about it is there's two really big challenges. One is the uncertainty when you arrive. You have no idea where the day-to-day logistics are. So you have to kind of figure that out. You have to find a laundromat. You have to find the restaurants that are good. Mm. Sometimes the little things like how far your Airbnb is from the center of town, those little intricacies, if you don't really know, can become a major inconvenience and can really impact your peace of mind and your happiness. So
do you plan them out or do you just kind of wing it?
I was winging it at the beginning, and because I hit so many points where I was like so frustrated with like the place that I'm at. Now I do way more research. I have a checklist that I go through, and it's like, okay, you know, I look at Nomad List, for example. They map out where the best parts of town are. I read some of the reviews and the forums. And so when I arrive at a place, I at least a little bit more informed than just showing up because someone said, oh yeah, this city's cool. And then, but yeah, so the other really big challenge is the loneliness. I think that's probably the hardest, because now the only connection that you have with your friends is virtual, and being on a different time zone. I wake up in the morning and I'm like, I want to talk to a buddy, and I have to wait till they wake up at 5 p.m. And these are things that you don't really think about. It's like, okay, I'm in a new city. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be adventure all day long, but you have work to do and you have a life to live. Because you're not a tourist, you're not on vacation. So much of my day sometimes is spent on the screen, just in the Airbnb, that I start to develop the habit of staying in. And I have to sometimes force myself. I'm an extrovert by nature, but sometimes I develop this habit of being a hermit because it's scary and because it's crazy. But because this happens every month, I'm now starting to tap into this, and I'm having more awareness in the habits that I build. So every month, it's kind of like a New Year's Day for me. When I show up in a new city, the first thing I do day one, I go out, I get my gym membership. I find the cool restaurants, and I use that day as my grounding day. And
like establishing landmarks kind of thing.
Establishing landmarks, establishing habits. And then I can decide from this month, okay, so I don't fall off the wagon and I don't develop bad habits. What are some of the things that I can do in this city to keep me excited, motivated, and not feeling like I'm alone all the time? So I'll research a few events. I'll find the online community. I'll make a few friends, and these things are sort of checkpoints that you can rely on.
Yeah.
So every week, okay, I'm going to go out. I'm like this week, I'm going to do a group trip up into the mountains. There's a bar hopping event that I'm going to go to. And this is just to develop a local circle of friends. I might see these people once or twice, but knowing that I'm not alone in the city is a big help. And then again, like I mentioned, finding your go-to restaurants so you don't have to have the stress of figuring out where things are. Setting up your gym membership so that you can maintain the health and fitness is probably the biggest thing as a nomad or an entrepreneur. You just need to make sure that you're dedicating that time to just keep the energy up.
Agreed. And okay, so something, I'm so glad you mentioned habits. As you know, this is a big part of the show. But you have such a unique perspective on habits from like a higher level, because every month you have an opportunity to almost either reset or like redo your routines because you're in new environments. That's new, like one thing I really, new feedback loops. I really like in the book, Atomic Habits, is that it mentions your environment kind of determines how, like, you're in a relationship with your environment and like the things around you kind of determine what you do. So have you ever noticed, when you first show up to location, like, is the habits you set on that first few days kind of carry over the entire month, or are you able to like reset halfway through?
Yeah, I think I can reset halfway through here and there, but the how you get out of the gate does have a major impact. When I arrived here in, where am I? Bulgaria. So when I arrived here in Bulgaria,
that's hilarious. You're like, which country am I in again?
Yes. So when I arrived here, it's like, you know, looking around the Airbnb, like, A, this Airbnb is epic. It's just so much good energy.
It looks and decorated like a, really well. Yeah, I was actually thinking that early on.
There's like a chalkboard right here. So the first thing I did when I did, I was like, okay, I'm gonna set up a chalkboard every day with my top seven tasks for the day. And before I go to bed each night, I'm going to make sure everything on that list is done. And then I'm gonna wipe it off and put tomorrow's on there. So this is like a new thing that I've usually been doing digitally, but there's a power in being able to see it each morning.
Yeah.
And you know, as I'm walking across the room and that feeling of validation as I'm seeing those things get checked off throughout the day is really helpful. So that's something that is new. But I do find, like, for example, last month I was in Bucharest and I started that month out super strong. And then I hit this funk because I was in the middle of building a new sales page for the retreat. And I was like grinding. And then I was also getting used to the time zone. So I was staying up later than I'm staying up to, like, I'm having calls go to like 10 p.m. and I'm normally in bed by 10. So it's my work schedule got shifted and I had to come to terms with waking up late, going to the gym, and then starting my work day around noon. And that threw me in a weird funk. But then about 2 weeks in, I was like, wait, you can still work with this. And so it was just tightening the screws, figuring out how to make it work and dialing things in. But the awareness is really what the key is. Even if you're not changing your environment every month to have this newfound awareness, you can literally just set aside one day a week or even every other week where you leave the phone at home, you go for a walk and you let yourself start to just really become aware of what you're doing on a day-to-day basis without judgment, without looking at the things that you're doing as bad, but just having the awareness to say, okay, these are the habits that I've picked up in the last 2 weeks. Which of these are serving me? Which of these do I want to let go of?
Nice.
And without having this shame, because I think as an entrepreneur, we're heightened to feel this, you know, shame. We've got to perform. We're comparing ourselves to everyone else.
Got to be perfect.
Yes. And it's so damaging. Got to go
according to plan. Yeah.
Oh man, it's so damaging. And so giving yourself space to really just think without judgment will then give you that awareness. And I think that's something that I think we need more of for sure.
Yeah, that's really important, especially that little space part, because that's kind of it's okay to feel and think these things, but it's the space that allows you to not attach to it. Because when we just kind of think, like shame, for example, I didn't do as good of a job as I could have, you know, maybe for the sales page, maybe I could have done better, I could have put in more hours. You tend to like have a difficult time letting go. At least I do, like have a difficult time letting that go. And it kind of bleeds into the next day. I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to spend like an extra 2 hours. Life happens. I don't spend that 2 hours. And then it just kind of compounds. Versus if you give yourself space, you're like, well, at the same time, I'm really proud of the work I did. And tomorrow we'll hit it harder. I think it's good. Another thing that I was wondering is when you're leaving, how do your habits like kind of carry over to the next location? When you're getting ready to close up, like what do you do to prepare yourself for the next spot you're living in?
Yeah, I love this question. And it's something that the airport has really helped with.
Nice. And of all places.
Yes. So I have now a ritual that I've started whenever I'm at the airport. So and for frequent travelers, there's a couple of things that I definitely recommend. If you're going to travel a lot, get a premium business card that gives you access to the lounge. Show up to the airport early. You're going to have an amazing workspace with food and coffee. And there, I get my best thinking done in the lounge. Mm-hmm. And what I'll do is I'll just have, since I'm sort of having these happen every month, I'll open up something called my monthly planning. And it's literally just, okay, what are my OKRs for this month? A little time for reflection. What are the habits that I enjoy, that I were helpful this month? What are some of the things that I want to let go of? I just go through setting the intention for the new month, as well as reflecting on what happened in the last month. And this time, you know, again, this is kind of bookended for me with the airport, but you can do this in anywhere. It doesn't have to be the airport, but for me, it's kind of ritualistic. I'm leaving, I'm letting go of one place, entering a new one. And then I'm setting aside some time to have intentional reflection and intentional planning.
That's really cool that you managed to fit that in as like your cue for that is the airport versus a lot of people. Like if they're trying to like me, honestly, I've tried doing like monthly planning, but then it'll be like August 5th. And I'm like, oh, right. I was supposed to do that like at the end of January or July. I like that. Yeah. Especially for frequent travelers, that's very much something you can make happen. Guess I got to get a premium card then. I'm sold.
You won't regret it. We'll just take a second to talk about travel. So the three things that I would highly recommend, these are three tools that I would not want to go without, is my Amex Platinum, hands down. That's just the best. You get in all the lounges. It's great. It's worth the extra expense. Or you get the Chase, whatever, Chase Sapphire Reserve, right? So you get a premium card. If not, you can also just buy the Priority Pass. It's I think it's like $300 for the year. Totally worth it, just for the lounge access.
$300 a year. I feel like that's close to the price of like the annual price for just getting the premium card.
Exactly. Yeah, it's better.
Yeah, that might as well. Card. Yeah. Totally. Then you get like a bunch of other benefits.
Yeah, and if you use the lounge like 4 or 5 times, it more than pays for itself. But there's so many other things that are on there. So that would be like the first. Then the second is, I have this talking of habits, right? I'm on the road, so I can't go to the dentist as frequently. So oral hygiene is super important. Yeah. I have this oral irrigator. It's like the water pick thing. And
I've seen
that. I got this collapsible one. So it travels with me and it's super light. But that makes, you know, I do that on a daily basis and it just makes sure that my teeth are always healthy and I don't have to worry about investing in spending time to go to the dentist and preventive, right? So doing these little
things. Taking care of your pearly whites, of course.
Totally. And the other is I can't show it to you because, well, maybe I could actually. If here we go. So the other is this laptop stand.
Oh, you know what? I've heard that from other digital nomads. They do praise the laptop stand.
Your back, your posture, everything. It's so important to make sure that you're positioned to stay positive and stay productive for the long haul. So if you're hunched over all the time, there's a lot of stress that happens.
That's a really good point. Yeah. It's like, I saw its positioning. It's like its own monitor. Like the laptop becomes the monitor and you have a keyboard. I also noticed you have a mic because I was going to ask at the end of the show, I was like, your audio is really crisp, but you've been traveling. So I don't know if you're carrying a mic or what kind of magic laptop you have. But do you have a travel mic or is that just one that
it's,
you take with you?
It's the I forget what it, I have the Solo, the Scarlett Solo, and then this is the PR40, the Heil PR40. So
nice.
Yeah, I just carry that with me and it's served me super well. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm taking notes, dude. It's definitely like I've been getting pushed closer and closer to the digital nomad life, but my mind comes up with all these objections like, well, how are you going to keep doing the podcast? How are you going to, and this is helping, just so you know.
Yeah, totally. When you're ready for that, let me know. I'll give you some pointers because it's intimidating for sure, but once you have a system, it becomes kind of second nature, like everything in life. Like the first time you do it, it's hard, and then once you become familiar with it, like, oh, this is easy.
What about what are some habits and routines that you have at home that haven't followed through the journey as a digital nomad? Like, what are things that you would do all the time but not really as much anymore?
Cooking is probably the biggest habit. I love to cook and I love to host dinner parties, but being on the road, sometimes you go to the grocery store, like I can't read Bulgarian, so I don't have no idea what I'm buying.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that.
And so it's like you know, you kind of get what you can. And so I'll have the basics in the house, but
yeah.
And also like I'm traveling to places where it's affordable. So it's, you know, I'd spend less money on the road than I would in LA. LA's prices are crazy. So,
oh yeah.
I'm able to now just go out and eat and get amazing food, but I do miss being in control of cooking at home and saving the time of walking out and stuff. So that would probably be the biggest habit that's been adjusted. Other than that, I think for the most part, I've been able to, I find my habits on the road are actually stronger and more thought out. While at home, I guess you would get, it's easy to get complacent. It's easy to just put things off. And being on the road, I am a little bit more aware of how I'm spending my habits. And so it helps you dial in a little bit better.
Yeah, I can totally see that. What are some habits that you've taken away? So you mentioned in your 20s, bit of a degenerate. What are some of the habits that you've had to take away from your life that kind of led to your success?
Whew. Well, I think the biggest one, and this is something that's my guilty pleasure, is reading comics. I love comics. I read the Korean ones, and it's just so compelling. You've got the amazing visuals. The stories are kind of inspiring, but the danger for me is I will not stop. I will want to read all the way. I'm binge reading, right?
Yeah.
So that becomes a challenge, and it comes at the cost of me performing well. I'll stay up too late, and then I'll wake up out of energy. And so I've had to cut that out. I'll do this now, like you know, it's my guilty little pleasure. Once in a while, I'm sitting there waiting for somebody. I'll scroll through some comic books, but
yeah,
that's been a big one for me. What else? The gym has been my lifesaver. So we talk about keystone habits a lot, like James Clear, Charles Duhigg. And fitness is probably, for me, the greatest habit in keeping me regular and keeping me positive. So in my 20s, even in my 30s, I put this off. I wasn't really active going to the gym. And it wasn't until I started actually running my production company back in LA that I started to take fitness seriously and going to the gym on a ritualistic basis. And I started to really enjoy, you know, getting stronger, having more energy. And before I knew it, that was my identity. And what would happen is that would trickle into the food I eat. So I slowly let go of sugars. I slowly let go of now I'm actually trying to go gluten-free because it's just not agreeing with me anymore.
Yeah.
But these are things that, you know, you take a more conscious approach to the food you eat. You take a more conscious approach to the sleep that you're getting. So I used to also just stay up late and wake up super early. And I would wonder why I wouldn't be able to perform all the time. So now sleep is sacred. I wear a little eye mask when I go to bed. Sometimes on the road, this can be challenging. The pillows might be weird or something. So it can be tricky, but so sleep has become sacred. I'll put a little meditation music as a wind down, try to not look at the screen before bed. And those are a few habits that really just start from taking the health and going to the gym as a priority. Without those, I wouldn't probably be able to keep up with the gym and all that. Meditation, I think, is something that I've never had as a habit. It was always just something that I would do once in a while until I started working with my coach. But now that has also become something that I have 30 minutes every morning, and that's part of just my wake-up routine.
Yeah.
And it helps you just really be able to be in the now, to not have to think so hard about decisions that show up because you're tempered. You've got that peace of mind. And now it's a treat. I look forward to it every single day. I'm like, oh, great. I get to meditate. Awesome. I don't have to think about anything.
That language right there is very important as well. In reinforcing kind of doing these habits is waking up and saying, oh, I have to meditate versus, oh, I get to meditate now. Like that's so important. Like I have to versus get to is such a minor difference, but it does such a major impact on our brain.
Yeah, totally. But I think the biggest habit out of all, and if there's anything that will enable you to find success, find happiness, find peace of mind, I think the biggest happiness, or the biggest habit that you can make, is positive self-talk and letting go of worry.
Yeah.
There's a great book that I think every entrepreneur, especially if you're starting, no matter where you're at, I think this is something that I think would be great to come back to at least once a year, is Dale Carnegie's book. Not the How to Win Friends and Influence Others. That's a phenomenal read as well. But the book about how to stop worrying and start living. I think the things that we think about on a daily basis have such an impact in how much energy we have to accomplish anything. And by getting in control of our thoughts, we're now able to embrace the risks that show up, to not get stuck hesitating when you see a hard task, but to just let go of the worry and be in the now. So talk to yourself positively. Don't get hung up in these cyclical thoughts of, I'm not good enough. Things are going to go wrong. I can't do this. But instead, rewire yourself consistently to think and remind yourself of how good you are, how incredible you are, how capable you are. And when that becomes a habit, now you're no longer shackled by the negative thought.
Yeah. Dude, that's so cool. I've never heard that book. I've read the other one, but I never knew that he made a book on to stop worrying, but that's definitely something that is constant in my life. And I want to get better at the self-talk and not worrying as much, which I agree. Also, another thing for entrepreneurs is it is insanely helpful for your confidence, and to kind of like an important thing I believe in entrepreneurs is believing in yourself and believing in the vision that you have. Like for you, the big possible, you're doing these crazy retreats with a whole bunch of people. Like if you were just kind of in it, it'd be so difficult to get these people to show up.
Dude, it's hard enough when you're full-fledged passionate about it. Like trying to convince an entrepreneur to take 4 days away from their business and hang out with a bunch of strangers. That's a hard thing. And, you know, people will either get it and they'll recognize that, wow, this is super important for me. I can see the value. It's an investment that I want to take. But yeah, there's a lot of people that aren't ready for that. And I can see it. If I was half-assing it, if I was just approaching it with this, I think this is going to be good, no one's going to come.
You might like it. You might get something out of this.
Nobody's going
to
show up.
What's worked then on convincing them to show up? What's been something that's really successful?
So with everything, there's the belief that you have. That is kind of the banner that you fly up. That's the thing that everyone rallies behind. So when your confidence is up, obviously people want to give you a shot. So the first retreat, the only thing I had going for me was my passion, was my faith in this. And then after you enlist enough people, and you might have to give some things away at the beginning, and that's fine. You have to be okay with just proving it and getting now some social proof. Then what you can use after that is the testimonies of the people that have been there. So those two things, results speak for themselves. So now I can go out and I can literally just point to a dozen success stories, people that have had life-changing moments by being at these experiences. At the beginning, the only thing you really have is your passion, your enthusiasm, and your desire to help. You may have to do something for free, because at the end of the day, people are only making decisions on emotional out of an emotional bias, right? Do I believe in this? Is this going to help me? And if you can position your solution, your product, your company as something that will fit that emotional need at the time, so whatever that your customer is going through, whatever pain that they're suffering from, if you can confidently say, I can solve this for you, and then give them some assurance, like, hey, if I can't do it, you don't have to pay. Or, you know, there's a no risk, right? Like, I'm so confident this is going to work. If you show up and you don't make 5 connections at this retreat, like, which I think is practically impossible, I'll give you your money back. And this is the confidence that will enable somebody from being on the fence of saying, I don't know if this guy's legit, to now saying, okay, if he has this level of confidence and he's able to guarantee this, there must be something that I'm not seeing. So let me give it a shot.
Yeah. Especially when other people are saying, not only does this guy have that level of confidence, but he did change my life. Though that's when like the testimonies really start working with you as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Noah. We have a couple closing questions for you and then we'll be on our way. Yeah. Real quick, what kind of music do you listen to?
Deep house, brother.
Deep house all day long.
Yes. So the morning I throw on a little meditation and then I'll switch it up with some jazz to get the, you know, just get the thinking going. But then when I start working, it's deep house. And that'll carry me through all the way through till nighttime typically. And then, you know, I might throw on some like rock and roll, Depeche Mode kind of like 80s stuff if I want to get ready to go out. Yeah. But yeah, deep house is my anthem.
Deep house. And is it the like deep house without words? Is that what you like to work with or?
Typically, or like the simple things. And I, you know what? I also love reggaeton, man. This is like,
good stuff. Oh,
because good of all stuff. My time in Latin America, it just brings back the happy vibes. And yeah, when I'm out, it's the Euro house, the reggaeton, these are, it just brings so much joy and happiness.
Yeah, reggaeton just makes you, I can't not listen to two genres and not want to dance. It's funk music and reggaeton. Like you just have to move. I don't know. It's something about the drums, man.
Yes.
Yeah, that's sick. What about any recent favorite TV shows or movies if you're watching any?
I haven't kept track with TV or movies. So I'm sorry. I'm not the person to ask for that.
There was I've heard this show recommended to me like by three different people. Don't know when I'll get to. I mean, honestly, I'm not a huge watcher as well. I was, and it's kind of tapered off, but it's called The Boys. It's on.
Oh, yeah. I've seen two episodes, I think. Yeah.
But the reason I mentioned it is because it's based off of comic books. And it's like the way my friend described it was like an adult version of Marvel. I was like, oh, that sounds interesting.
Right.
So it's like, it sounds pretty cool. But yeah, there is that. And finally, you mentioned you like reading. What kind of books are you reading right now?
So right now I'm reading this epic book. It's like called The Luxury Strategy, which is by, I can't remember his name, a French author. And it's basically going into the psychological reasons why people buy luxury, what makes a luxury brand versus something else. And it's written so well. It's like poetry. It's just every page I'm having to look up what the words are because he's very verbose or very not verbose, but his vocabulary is very poetic. Yeah. And so that, but I also read a little bit of sci-fi here and there. I'll read I'm trying to even remember the books. And then I just went back. I was trying to reread some of the classics. So I did Thoreau. I've done Steinbeck a little bit. And but yeah, I find 80% of what I'm reading is usually business related or sort of personal growth related. And then there's like 10% would be kind of fictional entertainment. And then I've got like 10% that I'm trying to dig into the classics.
And then a small 0.5% comics when you're waiting around trying to get away from that.
Yeah, I wouldn't consider the comics as reading. That's more just like that's more just a dead time. Yeah
like mindless scrolling.
Indulgence.
Some people do social media. I was actually having this conversation with some friends, is the difference of like we all have had phases of, do we read nonfiction to learn or do we read fiction? I really want to get back into reading more fiction. Like I'm mainly on like businessy books or like biographies, self-help books, but lately like there was one that's really been calling me and I kind of started halfway through. I really want to get back to it. So yeah, that's something that's always on top of mind. And we mentioned lots of books in this episode, so I'll be sure to throw them in the show notes in case anyone wants to check them out. And finally, where can people find you?
They number one place would be thebigpossible.com. And if you hit thebigpossible.com/Tulum, you'll be able to see the upcoming retreat that we have in November. And then obviously for social media, it's just at Follow Noah for my personal and at The Big Possible for the business.
Sweet. I'll throw those in the notes as well. Noah, thank you very much for coming on. This was an awesome conversation.
Arlo, my pleasure, man. It's great to chat. So we'll see you soon.